Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Just a heads up this week, I'm taping this away from my normal recording studio, so the sound on this is not going to be great. My sincere apologies. I did want to do podcast this week, and so I had to make a decision between like not the best sound versus not doing it, and so I opted to do it. But I understand it's not the greatest quality, so I appreciate anybody who hangs in on that. Hopefully, you know, the Apple reviews will not crush me. And if you want to leave a 5-star review and a nice note, this would be the good week to do it, because the sound quality won't be as high quality as usual. But I think it will be doable. The guests for this podcast: Chad Finn, sports media writer, general columnist for the Boston Globe; Austin Karp, the Sports Business Journal managing editor / digital. We had a great conversation, great roundtable. We discussed MLB viewership at the All-Star Game, baseball's decision to sign deals with so many different partners and why that's so unfan-friendly, home run derby versus All-Star Game, and why younger people have been morphing to the home run derby, where we all stand in a post-Tiger Woods world, and where interest in golf will be vis-a-vis viewership. Will LIV Golf get a deal in 2023? We all agree that it will at this point. Austin gives us a pretty deep dive into his USFL viewership stories that he's been doing, sort of an examination there. Talk about ESPN hiking the price of ESPN Plus. That is coming up soon. And finish up with the ESPN's Derek Jeter documentary. Chad Finn says that Nomar Garcia-Para deserved a documentary far more than Derek Jeter. So hopefully you'll enjoy this roundtable. I did. And without further ado, Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Austin Karp, Sports Business Journal. Okay, as I said at the top, you know, apologies to the listeners for what will not be as high quality sound as we normally do. That is on me, Richard Deitch, and not on Patrick Antonetti, my tremendous producer. I'm away from my traditional place that I'm recording. Did want to get something out for everybody. And so the downside is that the sound quality will not be as great this week. The upside, hopefully, is that the conversation will be interesting. You all can be the judge of that. As I mentioned, Chad Finn joins us, as he often does, sports media writer, general columnist for the Boston Globe, Sports Business Journal, managing editor / digital, Austin Karp. And gentlemen, welcome back, and my apologies for the crappy sound.
You sound marvelous, Richard.
You sound great to me. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see. The audience will be the judge, as they always are. All right. Austin, I'm going to start with you, and then Chad, please follow. We are taping this during the week of the All-Star Game for Major League Baseball. And, you know, they're in beautiful Southern California. Going to probably get some great imagery there with the All-Stars in Hollywood Walk of Fame, et cetera, et cetera. It's a good time to sort of think about where is baseball right now, Austin. And before we get into where some of these national contracts are, and I know I have thoughts on them, I'm sure you and Chad have thoughts on them, can you, from a viewership perspective, give us a sense of where we are in 2022 nationally between the alphabet soup of national carriers that MLB has?
Well, yeah, starting at that top level, I think Fox Sports, you know, talking about on the broadcast and cable side, I think they're down around 15% headed into the All-Star break. And it's going to be, I think, one of their least watched seasons on record. ESPN with that Sunday Night Baseball package exclusively down a little bit from the same point last year, but kind of up compared to where it was in 2019. But I think a lot of that has to do with the inclusion of out-of-home, the inclusion of some of these K-Rod telecasts, even though they're getting only around 200,000 viewers or so. So, like, on the, you know, this is the first year of that new media deal, and that's where the big, you know, hitters lie. TBS is kind of an apples and oranges sort of comparison, especially during the regular season, because they were for years on Sunday afternoons, and this is the first year they're kind of switching to Tuesday nights. So it kind of remains to be seen whether, you know, that's going to pay off for them. They had a lot of competition from other sports earlier on those primetime windows. But, I mean, the big issue is still where those RSN ratings lie. And, you know, in the 25 to 54 demo, they're up around 4% compared to last year. But I'm not sure that tells a true story of what's going on, because a lot of people just cannot watch their RSN still in the local markets. A better story for baseball is, you know, MLB.TV, which is really up almost like 10%. And that could be the future for them. Like, how can they really turn viewers to that sort of out-of-market package where you can watch, you know, those RSNs and actually be able to watch your team?
Chad, you're in an RSN market. So let's, yeah. And you're covering a team that, that's in playoff contention. And so that has to be, yeah. I mean, I know you laugh, but, you know, they're in, you know, as someone living in Toronto, the Red Sox are in playoff contention. Trust me on this. So how has it been for Nesson this year? Like, are you for, you know, it's not an issue, as Austin says, in the Boston, New England market to get the games, because you can get them. You have to pay for them. But is viewership up, down, flat? Where do Red Sox stand right now? Because it'll give us a little bit of a perspective of the RSN.
Yeah, last I heard it was they were up 2%. But, you know, we'll usually get those numbers right around now with the All-Star break for sort of the midseason report on that. But it's been an interesting year with them because they launched, you know, a separate streaming app that I was looking at it on Roku the other day, because it has reviews on there, and it had almost 1,000 reviews and it had 2 out of 5 stars. So I figure I probably need to get this thing pretty soon. For the last couple months of the season, I watch them a different way, but just to kind of get a feel for how that's going and why people are so frustrated with it. As a $30 a month price point, which might be part of it, but I think the numbers there are relatively stable year over year with them. But the thing I hear, and I'm sure you hear it too, but particularly being in, you know, a regional market here, people get really frustrated about where to find the games. If there's a Peacock game or, you know, really Apple TV anywhere, where it feels like, just based on my inbox, that older people have a hard time figuring out where this stuff is sometimes, and younger people can't afford it. They can't afford to pay for all these different streaming services, and for, you know, just a couple of games a year, if they're not really interested in any of the other content. So dividing up the pie really doesn't work for any fans. It works for Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball in the short term, but I think it leaves everybody frustrated that just wants to be able to watch their team in a stable place.
All right, Austin, I want to follow on Chad, and then I want to go to you, because this is really the sort of the core issue of MLB that I wanted to hit on for this podcast. Baseball's executives have clearly made, and Rob Manfred has clearly made a decision that baseball is going to extend its media rights to as many entities as they can get a significant check. They may make the argument that if we have Apple and Amazon and Peacock as part of our you know, business partners, this is a long-term investment too, because the future obviously is direct to consumer. But as Chad said, man, in my opinion, there's no more unfan-friendly sport than Major League Baseball. ESPN, Fox Sports, Fox Sports One, Turner, Peacock, Amazon, Apple, MLB Network, the RSNs. It is almost inconceivable, Austin, for an average fan to watch every single game unless they're just willing to just spend a crazy amount of money. You guys at SBD, cover this stuff very heavily on the business side. Like it's obviously a good investment for Major League Baseball because it makes them wealthier, but I question the strategy. I don't know, maybe nothing matters and everybody's gonna watch baseball anyway, but man, this really feels to me like such an anti-consumer kind of strategy. How do you see it?
I mean, yeah, they kind of got, that was the whole rub, I guess, from these media deals with ESPN saying, you know, we're not really interested in those non-exclusive midweek games. And it's such a unique, I mean, I guess it's not super unique because you do have baseball, basketball, and hockey that kind of have the same issue. But the tonnage of games with baseball obviously makes it more unique than even, you know, the basketball and NHL side. But I mean, especially for a market like Chad's talking about with Boston, a popular market, like, you know, whether you're the Cubs, the Yankees, the Cardinals, the teams that a Peacock or a YouTube or Apple TV are going to want. Yeah, it's going to be frustrating for fans of those teams because you're going to have to figure out where your popular team is playing on a given week. I'm an Orioles fan. Right now, we're not really going to be attractive to a lot of those teams, to a lot of those platforms, unless we're playing like the Red Sox or the Yankees. But like trying to, yeah, in this day and age, like getting people to pay for all of those platforms, especially younger consumers, is a big ask. And it's a big ask in the media landscape overall, as you see, you know, these price increases with places like ESPN Plus now. It's asking a lot and, you know, makes you really, you know, want the days of the bundle back.
You know, and it's interesting, Chad, because like baseball has a pretty good story to tell if they could get their story out to as many places as possible. They have really exciting, interesting young players. I think heading in the right direction of shortening the game a little bit. So it's going to be a little bit more digestible. You know, I think long-term offensively, like the strategy of universal DH is going to be good for the game just because it's going to create more runs, but man, you know, Austin hits on a lot of stuff. You know, the other thing too, and you know, and again, like this is an issue with hockey too. The Orioles are playing incredible baseball, right? The Mariners have played incredible. I don't think the Mariners have lost, it feels like, in the last 5 years. But you're never really going to see those teams nationally compared to the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Cubs, et cetera. And the problem the networks always say is, well, you know, we got to make money on this. And the Yankees and the Red Sox are guaranteed ratings for us. The Orioles and the Mariners are not. The same thing in the NHL. We got to show the Blackhawks. We got to show the Flyers, even if, like, the Oilers have the best player in hockey and Connor McDavid. I'm not saying I know what the solution is, but it does feel like baseball can do better to me in maybe expanding its brand a little bit. But again, maybe then I get back to my own sort of thesis to start this. You try to expand the brand, but you're expanding on 27 different platforms. So how can you really expand it?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, for all the appeal of the marquee franchises or, you know, a great out of nowhere story like the Orioles are becoming, or just the star power Major League Baseball has right now, where you have a pretty diverse group of young superstar players, great charisma, you know, allowed to show their personalities a lot more within the game than they used to. Baseball is still a regional sport. The people you're ticking off are the ones who ride the, you know, the ebbs and flows of the season of the 162 games of the Red Sox or Yankees or Orioles or whoever their team is, and expect to be able to watch that every night or every weekend. And when they go to sit down and turn on the YES Network or NESN or whatever they're paying separate money for to have, and the game isn't on, and they have no idea what the game is. We had an example of that this weekend where this MLB Network, and which was blacked out here, and it was on another network, I'm drawing a blank on, but people couldn't find the Red Sox Yankees game. And that drives people crazy. And that is the heart of baseball, is people's rooting interests in their individual teams rather than their appeal in the whole broad sport. And that's where this may backfire a little bit on Major League Baseball. They're going to get billions of dollars in the short run, and they'll have no regrets about any of this. But, you know, in the longer term, they're they're ticking off their fans, and this is an older demo sport as it is. So there's going to be some backlash to come down the road because of you know, how they've divided all of this up to get every last buck and left the regional fan in the lurch with their team way too often, especially on weekends.
One more thing for you, Austin, on RSNs, and then we'll go to the properties of the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game. Mike Mulvihill, who we all know, who's Fox Sports, you know, vice president of research and strategy, you know, the patron saint of publicly putting out there that baseball is in a much stronger position than maybe the sort of the public lets on. He tweeted on July 5th that the greatest cognitive dissonance in the business is that live sports are holding the bundle together. And he says they are. But at the same time, the RSNs, which are number one in prime, basically every major market, are doomed. How can that be true? So I flip it back to you, Austin. You know, if you base on what Mulvihill's saying, and yeah, he's always going to spin for the Fox Sports side, but his data is good, and his data is what it is. RSNs in markets all over the country. I mean, I know certainly in the New York market, yes is rolling when it comes to viewership and Yankees ratings. So there is, you know, even as Chad and I are sort of bemoaning baseball's issues here, there still remains obviously a big bunch of people in the RSNs where you can get the games that are really interested in these games.
I mean, yeah. First off, Yes Network is rolling this season. They're getting more viewers just than the New York market than an MLS games on gets on ABC across the entire country a lot of time. So it's a problem. I mean, we've kind of written ad nauseum about it, paying attention to how Sinclair is going to make this a viable business. And like you said, I'm sure Mike is kind of happy to be out of that side of the business on the regional sports net side. And, you know, but giving teams control of that versus having the control at the national side, like, how do you do that? How do you make that work? How do you make that a viable national product for your sport when there's such regional control? And are carriers going to pay what they did? And they have to solve the streaming issue, which is baseball was kind of behind on. So they have a lot of problems that they need to work on, and they're starting to. And I like that baseball at the league level is staying involved with Sinclair and trying to find some positive solutions. But I don't know what that is yet. If I knew, I would definitely not be here. I'd be, you know, selling that solution to, you know, Major League Baseball and Sinclair. But I know a lot of smart people are working on it.
Let me stay with you, Austin. Will this year be the year that the Home Run Derby outdraws the All-Star Game?
I don't think so. I mean, it could be close. It could be close. It was only around 1 million or so viewers last year, or, you know, 8.2 million for the All-Star Game versus 7.1 for the Home Run Derby. I like the Home Run Derby better now. I think it is exactly what, you know, Chad was talking about. It allows you to see the players and their personalities. It's fun. It's the closest thing that Major League Baseball has to Savannah Banana Bowl. And, you know, the All-Star Game is, I think it's going to see a record low this year, personally.
Ooh, interesting.
And it is just, what does it mean? Like, what is the draw there? Especially in the night before, you're seeing something that is a little more fun, a little more open, and you're getting access to those players that you wanted to see anyways. So is it going to happen? I don't know if this is the year, but it's coming, and that gap is closing fast.
Chad, as Austin points out, like, let me put down that the Home Run Derby will not beat the All-Star Game this year, although I will be fascinated by the gap, because we saw the gap obviously really shrink last year. This is either from Austin or from John Lewis, our buddy of Sports Media Watch. Like, as I was doing my notes, I usually am very good with specific attribution, but I didn't mark it here. So it's one of you two guys, and thank you to both of you. While the All-Star Game is behind the NFL and the NBA when it comes to the 18 to 34 and 18 to 49 demos, interestingly enough, last year it lost those demos head to head against the Home Run Derby. And particularly at 18 to 34, it got crushed. So that's interesting. And this sort of picks up with what Austin was saying, Chad, in that at least for younger viewers, for younger viewers, they have made it very clear that they enjoy and are more interested in the Home Run Derby than the All-Star Game.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me
at all. I mean, the Home Run Derby for you know, people, you know, my demographic, you know, I'm on the back end of 25 to 54 here, getting there, still tend to think of it as a relatively new thing. And it's not. I mean, there's a generation now that's grown up with it, associates it with the All-Star game and maybe even as a bigger event. And, you know, as we've seen the All-Star game, you know, trend downward in terms of viewership, I think it was down a little bit. It was 19, I think, the lowest rated All-Star game. And then this one was the second lowest rated, this past one. So we see it, you know, kind of trending the wrong way. The All-Star game's kept its appeal, even with format changes. And, you know, with these, you know, with these new stars, with a guy like Pete Alonso, who's won a couple and really embraces the challenge of it and turns it into kind of this, this WWE approach to it. It holds a ton of appeal, and it sort of fits what sports fans are looking for these days.
Do you think, Austin, some of it is it's not necessarily the speed of the entire event, because the Home Run Derby is a couple hours.
Like, it's a slog.
It's long. It you know what it is? It sort of feels like that. It's almost, I think maybe I'm incorrect here, but the Home Run Derby is so much, feels so much like a video game that
that's a good point.
That younger people can play on their, you know, whatever their gaming stations that they have. That like really duplicates, like, very, very closely to me, like the video game feel. There's all this stuff, and then there's breaks, and then there's all this stuff, and then there's breaks. Well, where the All-Star game is sort of, you know, one continuous regular baseball game, even with obviously these stars. The other thing is, and this is not the All-Star game's fault, MLB's All-Star game's fault, it was always, once like the novelty of interleague play hit us and now has become very normalized, I think the All-Star game was always going to start trending down. Like, the brilliance of that game when it was at its crazy, I mean, I looked at this the other day. In 1975, 33 million people watched the All-Star game. I think about that. That is insane. 33 million people watching an All-Star game. And today, you know, if that thing gets, got double digits, I think Fox would, you know, have Eric Shanks would have a parade in Southern California right now. So I think some of it is just the fact that, like, the novelty of seeing all these players that once upon a time you never saw before, you see these guys every single night on either highlights or on a game. And so I think just inevitably that game will continue to lose meaning, because I just don't think it's, I mean, I hate to say, because I like baseball, it's just the specialness of that game is not very special anymore. That's how
I think Interleague has something to do with it. I think, you know, this is the 20th year of MLB.TV. So if you do subscribe to that and you get that package and you want to go in and watch an Angels Mariners game to watch Mike Trout, you've been able to do that now for 20 years. And if you look at, you know, where the All-Star game is kind of ranked, it was 20 years ago that, I mean, the number that it drew 20 years ago, that's what it would need to do now to make like the top 100 telecasts of the year. And it'd be at the bottom.
Before we get off this topic, Chad, is there anything else you want to hit? When's the last time it was at Fenway, by the way?
It's 99. Yeah, it's just the anniversary the other day. Pedro Martinez, Ted Williams, all the steroid guys hitting home runs on tip.
Oh, by the way, let me correct myself.
So innocent then.
I said 1975, 33 million. It was 28 million. It was the next year. The 1976 All-Star game did 36 million ABC.
Nuts.
It's like inconceivable to think of like those numbers today. Crazy.
Yeah, it's just because of the options, like you said. I mean, we see whatever we want now. I grew up on, you know, game of the week with, you know, Scully and Garagiola, and oh my God, you know, the Dodgers playing the Cardinals. I never see these teams. And
by the way, that 76 All game, that's Mark Fidrich talking to the ball. So you might have gotten a couple extra million people.
Yeah, I would say
he was the, you know, like the most fascinating guy at the time, and a New England guy, right? Or New Hampshire guy. He was from
Massachusetts. Yep. Yeah.
All right, Austin, I'm going to stop this podcast right now. I'm going to do a column on the fact that the All-Star game has lost all these viewers from 1976, 36 million, because of the social justice messaging in Major League
Baseball. Of course, yeah.
Fidrich was also. That's why this. That's it, yeah. Right. That nobody
what, is
wants.
That the, is this tied to the 10 unvaxxed Royals that can get into your hometown? You going to work that in?
No one wants politics, and that's why the game has gone from 36 million to 8 million. My column, please subscribe to all my columns on my culture war. Thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Let's move on to golf. The Open Championships end. I'm not a big golf guy. I don't know if you two guys are. I think maybe I'll.
Nope.
So it's a pretty thrilling finish. And was it Cameron Smith who won? Am I right about that? Okay. Yeah. All right. So Cameron Smith wins the Open Championships. The big story the first 2 days, though, is Tiger Woods, who plays the first two rounds, doesn't make the cut, really like limping to the finish. And, you know, people now wonder, like, is this the last time we're going to see Tiger Woods at a Open Championship? And then the questions start, Austin, sort of to get broader, like, how many more times are we going to see Tiger playing in majors, or how many more times are we going to see Tigers playing in regular, you know, tour stops? And then as we continue to extend this, I start to think, because this is where it interests me, what does the post Tiger Woods landscape look like as far as golf viewership? Because for so long, like, the conversation was like, all right, what's it going to be after Tiger? You know, thank God CBS and NBC still have Tiger. Well, we're getting close now to the post Tiger Woods era. Where do you see the sport viewership wise in the post Tiger Woods era?
First off, I think we had this conversation a decade ago. What does the post Tiger era look like?
Right.
Like when, you know, with the mailbox incident, but yeah, I mean, now it's just a straight matter of this is his age and this is where he is. Could he come back and pull a Phil Mickelson at 50 and win a major? Of course. But the days of him, you know, competing at the World Golf Championships and some other, you know, random PGA Tour events, that's just not going to happen. So, I mean, what's going to drive the needle, and what is the needle these days? It's not going to be at what Tiger level, you know, numbers were for playing at Torrey Pines, but they're going to still see, you know, some upticks. If you have a Rory, if you have Jordan Spieth up there, I mean, they were getting decent, really big upticks for events like the John Deere Classic and seeing good numbers. That's also right now driven by this international intrigue with LIV Golf. Like, all right, what's going on with golf? Maybe I need to tune in and kind of see what's going on there. And I think that's driving some of the numbers. But, you know, is Cam Smith, you know, a George Custer lookalike going to drive these numbers? I don't think so. This guy, and plus this guy's probably headed to LIV Golf from what I understand. And that just begs the question, what is LIV's golf media future? So there's a lot to be written there.
We're going to get to what LIV Golf's media future is, but we'll move to Chad to hit this one. All right, Chad, Austin makes the point, like, for, you know, we probably, if I had this podcast 12 years ago, we would have been having this conversation, but now Tiger's chronological age forces the conversation, in addition to obviously all his injuries.
46.
Yeah. In addition to everything else. So where do you stand on a post Tiger Woods future in golf? Obviously, like, people are going to watch golf. There's millions and millions of fans. People will certainly watch the majors. The question is, like, could they ever reach the Tiger Woods viewership heights again? Or like, is the next 25 years just the new normal because you're never getting this phenomenon again?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most amazing things about Tiger is that he was the heavy favorite, you know, at his peak, and yet probably the vast majority of viewers were rooting for him, or at least it felt that way. Well, you get this, it's not often you get the heavy favorite who also is, you know, is the person that people want to see win and you know, they're pulling for, because that charisma and the talent is just so otherworldly. And I mean, what's the best case scenario for how you follow Tiger? We've been looking for this for years, waiting for one or two guys to really emerge as these, you know, bright stars in the landscape that are in, in the hunt almost every week, and, you know, play with a style and a flair that draw people to TV. And, you know, you get a Spieth or, Rory McIlroy for a little while, or, you know, a few names down the list, but, you know, you look up in the Masters and it's, you know, Scottie Scheffler. I mean, great golfer, not a lot of charisma there, you know, feels like he'd be Jim Nance's favorite golfer.
shot on Nance from the,
yeah, I know he's probably listening. So we'll, we'll deal with that one later, but you can't find another Tiger, and I don't know how you even get within 80% of what he was in terms of appeal, the money he brought in, the viewers he brought in. It just, that golfer doesn't exist yet that we know of.
I agree.
Good news, they're in year one of a media deal, so though, you know, locked up there.
Got time, yeah.
Yeah, there's, I mean, like Michael Jordan, like LeBron, like, you know, fill in your once in a lifetime kind of athlete. There is not going to be another Tiger Woods, and I'm with you guys. Again, the sport will continue to draw interest. It's, you know, it has the advantage of people play it, so they not only watch, I think, for the competition, but many golfers watch, I think, to learn almost in an instructional manner, to sort of see how these guys and women do what they do. So you might be able to pick up tips. So that always gives you a little bit of an extra share. Austin, I want to get to you. I was asked this in a recent mailbag at The Athletic. Do I think LIV Golf will get a media deal? And I said rather cynically that the reality of the world that we live in, when the NBA has a partnership with China, whose human rights record is, you know, horrific, when Fox Sports or Fox goes to Russia to broadcast the World Cup, Russia's obviously human rights record horrific, and everybody certainly that I know are women's basketball fans are thinking about Brittany Griner. NBC has done Olympics in China, in Sochi. And you're right. So, like, again, they have done business with places that have horrific human rights. It's not that any, I think, right-minded or decent human being likes this, but when I answer the question, I tried to be a realist. I think a lot of these sports entities will deal with the fallout of bad optics if they think ultimately that fallout recedes and they can get a big sports rights deal at a decent price. And my thought, and again, I had this talk with Chad, I think a couple months ago, and I think we disagreed. So I'll start with you, Austin. It'd be interesting to see if Chad has shifted a little bit. I believe that LIV Golf will be on some media outlet next year. It's obviously not going to be one that has associations with the PGA, but it could be like a BN. It could be a, I don't know. I'm just making this up, you know, Discovery Turner, whatever, whoever doesn't have a connection with the PGA. I think they'll get it at an incredibly cheap price, and I think they'll just gamble that the people who are disgusted by this will eventually sort of recede in their disgust, and they'll have this property with major significant golfers. Will I be happy about being right? No. But if you were going to ask me my prediction, that would be my prediction in 2023. How do you see it?
I agree. I think somebody will pick it up. I think there'll be enough interest for a short-term deal. I think you're absolutely right. The PGA Tour connections automatically rule out an NBC, a CBS, an ESPN. Fox, I mean, do they still treat golf like it's kryptonite? They did not have a good run with the USGA. Yeah,
I don't see it. I don't just for that. Not because I think Fox somehow is, you know, is.
They wanted no part of that. Yeah.
It's not that Fox is Mother Teresa. I just don't think they want golf.
Yeah, I agree. So it's like you said, you're talking about entities that are looking for content particularly to fill hours of streaming platforms. And yeah, maybe it is a Turner Discovery. Discovery has a lot of ties already with European sports, and they might fit in that sort of portfolio that they have, especially as they want to launch, you know, a broader streaming service. Could this help that? Maybe.
What about you, Chad? How do you see it these days?
Yeah, I agree. I don't remember disagreeing, but I probably did. But, you know, we've had that exodus of, relatively big names that will probably continue to some degree, especially if it gets easier to go without any backlash, whether it's Cam Smith or other guys that's, having success on the tour right now. But kind of feels inevitable at this point. People are going to want to follow the guys they know. And if the PGA keeps losing prominent names and guys higher up on the leaderboard go too, it's going to be a certainty that it ends up on TV somewhere.
Yeah, the real question. Yeah. Go ahead, Austin.
I was going to say NBC is not going to be happy about their Ryder Cup numbers going forward if there's nobody to play on the Ryder Cup.
Well, I was just going to say that we're getting closer to the point where like the majors like have a significant decision at hand. That if, again, I realize that golf is not my thing, but if, let's say, eventually 20 of the top 50 players in the world are on the LIV Tour, somebody I'm sure who's a golf nut would tell me right away that, well, right now it's 11 or right now it's 12. So let me just use 20. 20 of the top 50 players, Austin, if they're on the LIV Tour, I don't know how the majors can prohibit them from playing. I just think at a certain point, economics will factor in and they're not going to want to ban these guys even if they disagree with them heading to the tour.
Yeah, I think they'll end up allowing these players to play. This year was a kind of scattershot and who was allowing and who wasn't allowing, but it's not just golf. You've seen it with tennis, and you've seen places like Wimbledon keep Russian players out and then have a Russian player win. But this is the similar sort of thing. You had the RNA kind of banning not players, but they had a tiff there with Greg Norman. And then what do you see? A guy who's likely headed to LIV kind of take the trophy. And it's I don't know if it's worst case scenario, but it was probably not on their list of things they would like to have seen happen. But yeah, long-term, I think they're going to allow him in. And what does that mean for the prestige of PGA Tour and PGA Tour events in the long term?
It's a great question. And it's sort of the money question.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
All right, we're going to move to a couple more topics here. Austin, I'm going to go to you. You did a phenomenal job, in my opinion, of chronicling the USFL viewership and putting it into context. I wonder if you could, in a, shorter span here, do that for my viewers. What the USFL basically did viewership-wise, and in your expert analysis, how did that do against whatever the expectations might have been at the beginning?
I'll try to be like that priest from Spaceballs. And all right, here's the short version of events so we can make that happen. But they did incredibly strong. This is spring football, okay? In the first year of the third league, is kind of try to make this work. And you're talking about a regular season with around 750,000 viewers. That's incredibly strong, making something from nothing. And more importantly for Fox, they own this thing and they tried to keep costs down, and it kept them from having to make an enormous bid on media rights for something like MLS, for something like the Premier League, which had been up recently. So instead, they created their own and they got better numbers. I mean, and that's just the regular season. Then you look at their championship game, you're talking around, what did it get, like a 1.5 million viewers in there? And that was bigger than like the MLS Cup last season. It was bigger than what the best Premier League game has drawn on U.S. airways. It's bigger than the Monaco Grand Prix, bigger than the Winter Classic on TNT this year. So it's up there with some properties that kind of make you go, huh, I can't believe the USFL Championship was getting this strong of a number.
Austin, would thank you, Austin. I should say, Chad. How did you see it? You know, you're not somebody who obviously was diving into the USFL viewership on a week to week basis as Austin did, but he really, I think, makes a pretty compelling argument that, like, hey, like, first year self funded league, they did pretty good in terms of viewership. I think Chad and I are in agreement with this. I'm sure we talked about this in previous podcasts. I do not believe this league will exist 4 or 5 years from now. It's nothing against the league. I'm actually rooting for myself to be wrong. I just don't think spring football has a long-term shelf in the United States, and it's been proven. But
you think it just folds?
I don't know. I haven't sort of thought about that before. But Chad, like, here's the point. Like, Austin makes a really good argument here. Like, these are pretty good numbers for a first-year startup league that I'm not sure anybody expected would necessarily put those numbers up.
Yeah, you know, anecdotally, I mean, I've been asked about it, like, on radio appearances, you know, up here in New England and stuff, and I'm always kind of taken aback by that. One, because there's no team, you know, they put the Breakers in New Orleans, and is that what they are? New Orleans instead of Boston, where they originated with the original USFL, so there's no interest here that I thought, but the people who... I think consider the NFL their favorite sport. And that's a lot of people in professional football, their favorite sport, and probably also pay relatively deep interest to college football. And so they know kind of the fringe players, the guys who go in the sixth and seventh round of the draft and don't make that, you know, don't make the last cut in the NFL. They have some knowledge about these guys in the USFL, and they're happy to get that fix of just having some football when there are no NFL games. The NFL's never actually had a season now, as we know, but when there are no actual games, it's a good little fix. And as long as expectations are reasonable and they don't start trying to compete and signing top college players or guys who are draft picks, and they're not going to do that. There's no indication they don't have the money for it. I think they can hang around for a little while. It's interesting to look at the Fox Sports website, by the way. It's now USFL is now the fifth thing on their task bar, so it's moved back a little bit behind MLB because they got to push the All-Star game now.
I'll say this, Richard, like, you know, the XFL numbers when it was around in 2020 before COVID shut it down, they were even stronger, like way stronger than these numbers. So there is that appetite for spring football. But what does it mean when they're going head to head? That I do not see. Can there be two leagues? No, I don't see two spring football leagues. I see some sort of merger down the line. I don't know what that looks like, but the XFL has incredible brand equity. And I think that's the name that survives long term.
Yeah, by the way, Chad, I'm not saying that ESPN doesn't do it. I'm sure The Athletic would, like, push, like, some big special report that it does to the front. Obviously, if the Boston Globe has a story of significance that it worked on, it's going to push to the front. But there were very few things that were just more amusing to me this year on a sports nerdy thing to see Fox Sports' website just, like, making the USFL, like, the one of the top two stories. Of the day. It reminded me when they sort of, I think this was under the Jamie Horowitz video initiative. The pivot to video. When, like, whatever Skip Bayless or, like, Colin Cowherd said that day, like, that was the lead story.
Yeah.
On Man Walks on the Moon would be second to Colin Cowherd saying, like, you know, Alex Rodriguez should be traded or something like that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Last couple of things here before I let you guys get out of here. I appreciate your time. Austin, your colleague John Orand reported that ESPN is hiking the price of ESPN Plus by 43% starting in August. Per Orand's reporting, as of August 23rd, the streaming service will cost $9.99 per month, $99.99 per year. All these companies do this to try to pretend it's not $100. A sharp increase from what it's now, $6.99 per month and $69.99 per year. Well, I would love to really, I mean, the real story, Austin, I'd love to talk about is, you know, who's leaking this to Orand? Why is Sports Business Journal getting this as a trial balloon to see what's out there? That said, I don't, you know, and I joke about that. This is pretty big. Like, I don't know. It's big news to me. And maybe it'll sort of grow as like consumers get their bill, because 22.3 million subs as of Q2 for ESPN Plus. So they, to me, Austin, like sort of quietly, and no disrespect to John Orand, but, you know, quietly within his news break, obviously, this is like, they're sort of telling you like, all right, like where, this is where our new price point's going to be. And if you want this direct to consumer service, which one day probably will be the flagship, you got to pay up more now. Big, I don't know. It feels like a big story to me. How do you see it?
It is, in the, especially in the grand, the broader, you know, media landscape. And, you know, I know John had that hush-hush off-the-record meeting at the German Pavilion at Epcot with Mickey and Donald, so maybe it came out of there.
was Burke Magnus and Josh Krulwitz there?
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if they were on the ride together at the Norwegian Pavilion, but I can make Epcot jokes all day. But nice. Maybe it's a play to get people to really get part of that broader Disney bundle. You know, increase the ESPN and just be like, all right, if I have ESPN Plus and it's costing this much and they're not increasing the cost of the overall Disney bundle to get Hulu and to get Disney Plus, then it looks like a better proposition to kind of up it a little bit and just get all three. And then maybe, you know, when's the last time I used Netflix? Maybe I cancel Netflix and use Disney and Hulu instead. So there's a lot of strategy going on there at a higher level. But this just gets back.
That's to only $4
yeah,
more.
It's only $4 more. You look at that, you're like, ah, you know, why not just up it by $4 and I can cancel something that doesn't give me as much value anymore. Do I really need Peacock? All right, maybe I cancel Peacock and I have Disney during these months. And, you know, there are so many packages now that, yeah, you're going to see some of those smaller ones just get cut. And that's when you're going to start hearing more about media consolidation. Who does maybe Comcast go out and buy, because they have a lot of cash on hand too.
Yep. Let me just say this, as a big Star Wars nerd, Disney Plus is phenomenal. And I would pay far more than they're charging me. Now,
definitely the one we watch most in this house. Yeah, probably even more than Netflix.
Yeah, again, that's not I'm sure like for others it might be Netflix, and then for some others it could be Peacock or whatever. But I think Disney Plus not only is an excellent interface, it's just again, like The Mandalorian and the Obi-Wan series alone, like to me,
yeah,
I would have paid
the entertainment proposition is incredible. But then you look at a property like Peacock, and I can't even tell you the original series that might be on there. All I know is the sports that has gone there.
Yeah, well, as a wrestling guy, I gotta have Peacock. But yes, I know what you're saying. It's a different proposition. All right, Austin, not Austin. I'm sorry, Chad. I'm losing my mind here. Here's what I want to finish with you, Chad. And Austin, you're welcome to follow. But this is like a layup for Chad. Please, as the Boston Globe's sports media writer, let me know what you think of the Derek Jeter 50-part documentary on his life.
Well, that's my running joke. And Omar should get an 8-part documentary if Jeter gets 7, because he was better. But that's my Twitter shtick anyway.
It's a good joke, though. I like that.
I mean, he's opened up more than he has before. You know, a little bit of talk about the A-Rod stuff, some of the being in the PED era. That kind of thing, but it's still not, you know, it's kind of a hagiography if it's you telling your own story, more or less. It feels like it could have aired on the Yes Network without many changes. But you know, everybody's trying to have their own version of The Last Dance, and what we're finding out is just there's really not anybody who's as appealing and still a little bit, I don't know if mysterious is the right word, but you know, Michael Jordan has that edge to him that makes him endlessly fascinating. And Jeter just doesn't have that. You know, he's been a private person, and he's opened that up a little bit more, but still not the total open book.
How did the Brady series, Chad, play in New England, where it would have been, you would figure if it was going to get any kind of significant attention, yeah, it would be there.
It was really anticlimactic, actually, because he retired before the last episode aired, and then he came back, and you remember we all thought that we were getting the 10, I think, episodes of, you know, bang, 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 bang. And then there was that big gap in between, which made you suspicious that something might be going on, that he was going to walk away or something else that he wanted to reveal in that last episode. But by the time it finally aired, people were tired of hearing about him. It didn't really get any buzz at all here when episode 10 finally aired. There was, you know, we had people doing write-ups of them, you know, again, you'd get this screener before it aired and do a write-up to run immediately, and it got a little bit of traffic, but that traffic gradually decreased as the series went on.
Austin, you're in Charlotte, so, and you're a Georgia Tech guy, so I know you'd watch a Bobby Crimmins 10-part doc, but does the Jeter documentary, like, I should say, as someone who lives in the South, like, does that documentary have any appeal for you? How do you look at it as somebody who's a little more disconnected from Chad, who lives in Boston, and me, who's a lifelong New Yorker?
You know, I'll talk about it in the sense of, I am a documentary nut, and I will check this out, just like I do have still, you know, Man in the Arena kind of queued up. And I am kind of curious, because it does have some of the elements that Last Dance had, in that, you know, it's not a guy who really was getting in front of a camera, a documentary style, and talking a lot. Tom does this, I feel like, a lot, and he's still playing. And there was, you know, there was no letting the fine wine breathe at the retirement. It's like, you know, he's still active. Do I need this documentary right now? I think Jeter has been away from the game just long enough so that, all right, I kind of want to hear what he has to reflect on. I want to hear from him. I want to, because you didn't hear a lot about, you know, this side of him, I think, while he was playing. And, you know, I want to see how it was produced. I know there was a lot of criticism about the Michael Jordan doc for being, like, you know, completely controlled by him and his, you know, his party. And I know there's a lot of those elements here with Jeter, but I want to see it before I make any sort of judgment call.
I'm wondering what Jeter's angle is with this, because he left the Marlins. He never really revealed anything about himself. The beat writers liked him because he was always available and friendly, and never said anything. I mean, but the friendliness and the availability, accessibility, got him put him in people's good graces. But he never revealed anything about himself. So, you know, he's on Twitter now. He's or at least a PR person as Derek Jeter is on Twitter now. And I wonder what his ultimate game here is. He pushing like a more Players Tribune stuff? Does he have a business interest here? Or because obviously he's thought it through.
He better have the stories that Michael had. You better have those Michael Jordan, I'm going to beat the hell out of Clyde Drexler type of story, you know, to make this sticky. Because here we are 2 years later, and it's going to be years that we're kind of talking about The Last Dance. And like, oh, do you remember that scene? Do you remember when they talked about this? Or, you know, things that came out of The Last Dance. Can it have that sort of staying cultural impact power?
I think so. A couple things here. I think because Jeter never talked, if he reveals anything, or if the doc reveals anything that is, you know, falls under the banner of sort of sexy, like he says something about playing against somebody, like the Alex Rodriguez stuff obviously falls under that. Derek Jeter had a lot of high profile relationships in the 90s, right? So if there's any headline about Mariah Carey or Minka Kelly or someone like that, that'll get attention. I don't know how far Derek Jeter's going in that. The one thing, Chad, you sort of said something and it sort of cued me off here. I think Jeter does it because of, I think at a certain point, even guys who didn't really talk to them to, or didn't really say much during their career, don't you think there's a desire or a lust for relevance still? Isn't that what we all want? And Jeter now doesn't play anymore. He's no longer an executive with the Marlins. And this series gives him relevance. Like, the biggest sports brand in the country is committing whatever it is, 10 episodes to his life. And even if you are not as big a egoist, let's say, as Alex Rodriguez, at a certain level, Derek Jeter is an egoist, because you have to be an egoist to me to be a Hall of Fame athlete.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he had a massive ego. didn't reveal itself in the ways that it did for A-Rod, which is probably one reason why A-Rod's a more compelling figure. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it feels like he's trying to portray is a hard word, but you know, he's doing a lot of stuff with his family. He'll do Instagram videos or TikTok where he's driving around. His wife, Hannah Davis, the former SI swimsuit model, is there with him and their kids. And you know, he's Mr. Inept Dad, you know, joking around and things like that. And it is a side of him he's never revealed, but I feel like there's more to it than he just misses the spotlight. I feel like because Jeter's always been so calculating that there's some sort of business angle here or marketing angle that hasn't been fully revealed yet.
There could be. Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, it could be that. It could be 40-something-year-old guy trying to find himself, a little bit of a midlife crisis kind of thing. I don't know. All right, last one, Austin. Then I'm letting both of you guys go. If you, as someone who's in this part of the country, you had to guess today, does the ACC remain intact because of the grant and rights deal? Or do you think in the next year or two, one of these ACC schools decides to bolt? They're willing to pay whatever the onerous fines are from bolting in exchange for being part of a gigantic, brand new mega revenue conference.
You know, first, I will give credit to John Swofford, the old ACC commissioner, for at least having the vision to have that grant.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
Because that's the only thing that's kind of kept it together for now. And yeah, I think we'll get through this season. And then around this time next year, you know, could I see Clemson and Florida State bolting for an SEC? Like, yeah. Yeah, I do. And then what does that mean for other schools down the line, like Chapel Hill and Duke and, you know, my own school, Georgia Tech? Do we fit with more of the portfolio and academics of a Big Ten? So I think there's still movement to be had. And I don't think I do see exodus from the ACC long term.
It's interesting. I know, Chad, Boston College is the one thing I would say again, I have read my colleagues at The Athletic have done an incredible job on this. It seems like they're writing about expansion almost hourly. The school that to me is really the most interesting one when it comes to the Big Ten is North Carolina. Big public institution.
Ooh, yeah.
Big public institution, great academics, and in a part of the country that it feels like the Big Ten would really love to be in. Again, I don't know if like North Carolina would go by itself. I don't even think the Big Ten is going to expand anymore this year, but that's how I look at it. But Chad, in your neck of the woods, listen, BC is not the same football power it once was back in the Flutie Glenn Foley
football power
era, but it's a great school with a great reputation and a historically good basketball school.
They had Matt Ryan. I think they get up to number two.
Oh yeah, Matt Ryan.
Maybe even number one for a week.
What do you think? You think? I mean, Austin makes an interesting observation that he thinks the ACC eventually will lose some of these schools, and you know, will change in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I'm still getting used to BC being in the
I agree.
ACC. It's been 15 years.
It's a Big East school to me forever. I'm with you.
Yeah, if this all results in just the old Big East basketball conference reassembling, I'm fine with that. It's all worked out in the end. But I think there's a better chance of BC ending up in America East than anything like that ever happening.
Yeah, I know. I'll do a podcast on it with people who cover the sport, but man, no one ever talks about the impact of all this stuff on a sport that I've covered for a long, long time and really like women's basketball. Very few people have talked about like how it's going to impact like baseball or track. It's just like some of these schools are powers in these other sports, but you know, I get it. Football pays the bills, but it's just frustrating.
I'm looking forward to that USC Minnesota baseball game in late February.
I hope it's at
Minnesota.
I can promise you that will not be at Minnesota. All right. Is there anything else you guys want to add before I let you out? You gave me an hour of your time. The sound quality isn't great. I can't thank you too enough. Anything else you want to get out of any takes you want to get out before we're out of here?
I would like to reiterate that Nomar is better and does deserve an ESPN documentary, but I feel like I'm probably on an island there.
Yeah, he's not going to get a doc. Although, quite frankly, you can make the argument his life is 100 times more interesting. He married Mia Hamm.
Yeah, for a lot, you know,
like that relationship to me is a lot more interesting. No offense to Miss Hannah Davis, but that, I mean, he,
your former colleague.
Yeah. And we never met, by the way. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, Nomar and Mia Hamm, that's one of the great sports power couples of the day. And Mia Hamm, I find endlessly fascinating because she did not let people in.
Oh, neither did he.
Right into her orbit. She was an incredibly great player who was very, very private. So to me, that's a more interesting figure than someone, you know, who we sort of know everything about.
Richard, he was absolutely miserable, just awful guy to deal with at the end of his Red Sox career. And he's in the media now. And that,
it's always fascinating.
Does that ever offend you when that happens
to
certain guys?
I think here's the thing. Like when I was younger, a lot of this stuff like really ticked me off. And I think I just became either more cynical or more virilis. It's probably honestly why, like, I wouldn't be too revelatory. I'll be probably stopping writing about this sooner than later. Cause I do think, you know, there's a value in having someone who's like, you know, 25 and like full of piss and vinegar on certain stuff. But like, I don't like it, Chad. I think it's such a hypocritical, like, kind of take to like sort of not be professional with the media or to be miserable with media members. And then to obviously take a job once you leave. I think I've just become so cynical that I know it happens all the time. I know television executives do not give a shit about this.
You're resigned to it.
Yeah. And like TV executives don't care about it because a lot of the TV executives have no journalism background. They're there to make money and they're there to sell ads. So I'm resigned to it, but no, like I would love like for someone who like understood and respected like what the job of a sports journalist or sports reporter is and at least had a professional relationship, even when someone was writing or saying something negative with you, and then to move to the media. But I think the reality of the day is that you are going to get a lot of people who were, you know, who as athletes did not have a great relationship with their local press corps and continue to go into the profession. That said, there's also a lot of media members who are assholes. So it's not just a one-way street here.
And that's next week.
And if I was LeBron or Durant, if I was Kevin Durant or LeBron James, and like I've been shit on like for like 15, 17 years from places like, you know, that have made a shitload of money on me and the Jamie Horowitzization of all this stuff, like you got a reason sometimes to be pissed. I don't know. Austin, you want to be the voice of reason here?
I've been known as a lot of things, never the voice of reason.
All right. Chad Finn, sports media writer, general sports columnist for the Boston Globe, making the case, too, that Nomar Garcia-Parra was a better player than Derek Jeter. Sports Business Journal managing editor / digital, Austin Carp. Check out his work. And again, there's a lot of people, obviously, who read Sports Business Journal, listen to this podcast, so you know about Austin. If you don't, and you don't subscribe to SBJ, just check out his Twitter feed, because a lot of times he will really provide you with some really interesting viewership information that should just give you a better sense of sort of like why some of these organizations do what they do. And again, I've said this a million times, but Austin Carp and John Lewis of Sports Media Watch and Anthony Krupe of Sportico, these are people who traffic in this stuff on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, when it comes to viewership, as a general, Bill Shea, my colleague at The Athletic, doing this now, when it comes to viewership, just my take is I trust the people who write about it on a day-to-day basis, not necessarily people who parachute in, you know, once every couple months to sort of sell the soap on what they want to sell. All right, Chad and Austin, thank you for doing this, and I'll have you on again down the road when the sound quality is much better.
Well, thanks, Rich. Thank you.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Austin and Chad for doing this. Again, I appreciate them doing this very much when the sound quality is a little bit different than they're used to. Thanks to Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work putting this podcast together. Thank you, obviously, for everybody at Cadence 13. Want to head to the archives? There should be things that you'll enjoy. Tom Rinaldi came not too long ago for a long conversation on his new audio podcast series, Wesley, which is about Lyman Wesley Bostock Jr. Zach Kiefer on his podcast series on Andrew Luck. Monica McNutt came a couple weeks ago, talked about her career and ascension, did an emergency podcast with Andy Staples on USC and UCLA heading to the Big Ten. TJ Quinn discussing his reporting on Britton Briner, and ESPN chairman Jimmy Pitaro, 63-minute conversation with him. I appreciate all the nice words for this podcast, and I appreciate very much that you've continued to listen after all these years. It means a lot. I appreciate that. Again, thanks to Patrick for all his hard work this week. Not easy to do when the sound quality is a little bit off. And I thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.